This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
You're here with Love, our proud.
With Z and G on Joy 94.9. And look, Al Jackson just dropped into the studio.
It's the middle of the night.
I know, exactly. He just dropped in after the show. Thank you so much for dropping in, Al. We appreciate it.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me this late. How are you feeling?
We're feeling well.
Again, I have this argument every time we interview someone. It's early. Midnight is early.
No, you're right. It is early, but it's the early stages of early. So yeah. It's really, I guess, you know, split it down the middle. Is it late for you, Al?
This is normal for me as a comic, because I think everybody that works at night, you can't just get off stage and go straight to bed. Like, I think that's weird.
There's no switch off.
You got to slowly. So this is. Yeah. I feel like I could still do another show.
What's your post show routine? Do you have any? Do you have any rituals? Or do you?
Yeah,
just...
it's very in depth. I hope I can break this down for you. I find a bottle of Jameson. I usually just. I love. Sitting backstage with the comics. That's the best part. Yeah. After every show is just
chatting.
Yeah, because we've all traveled and done all these things. So it's like a mini family reunion every weekend. So,
and it's a different mix every time. You get to see people you probably don't see all the time.
Yeah,
and
right. Everybody kind of, you know, we're all kind of passion ships in the night. So I'll see my friends that were there the week before, and I see friends coming the next week. So, yeah. And then you have local comics in every scene. So it's really great.
How often do you travel internationally? I mean... You're out here in Australia. This is your second time out here.
Second time in Australia. Love it. Love it here. I mean, it sounds, you know, I don't want it to sound disingenuous. Like, I really do love it out here. It's the people here have a different attitude and approach towards life, and it comes across with just like the casual way that they receive jokes during stand-up. In the States, there is now a big push towards, and I'm fine with political correctness, but it's now somebody's job. They're bloggers at the show that are waiting for you to say something.
Yeah, and they just jump on it.
Right,
yeah.
And they jump on it. They take it out of context, which I think is like what's been lost. I always think that the best thing that adults that we have over being children is like we can grasp context and understand how things are said. But when a blogger takes something, isolates it, and then puts it, Al Jackson said, you know, women shouldn't
literal.
Vote.
Yeah,
yes, it it's like, wait, what? Like, who said that? So, yeah, I think it's... I like coming here because the audience is... I think their approach to life is different and it comes across.
How's a flight for you? Is it long flight for you? What's the flight ritual? Like, do you get... Are you sort of a get on the plane, get drunk sort of...
No.
I don't know.
That's a rookie move. I learned that the hard way in London.
Oh, wow.
I got asked... I used to be... Platinum with this one airline that's no longer even an airline in the States, U.S. Airways. It went away. Oh. But I used to be able to, because of they were affiliated with British Airways, I got into the international lounge at Heathrow I was coming back, and they dropped me off probably like 4 hours early. And like at the bar, there's not even a bartender. It's just bottles of alcohol. It's like you're at your dad's house and he's away on vacation. You're like, wait, I can just reach for this bottle of and no one's going to be waiting for like someone to smack your hand. And so I got hammered. But like, and you're like, this is great. And then when you're like, the flight's taking off and you're like already hungover, I have a 12-hour hangover in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
And you can't go anywhere. You just
feel terrible. So you got to pace yourself. I always say my flight ritual, I do a little, I do melatonin, a little Dramamine, and maybe 2 red wines, and just turn it onto a movie that's horrible, like Independence Day 2.
And just fade away.
And you're gone. It's 2 terrible lines and then you're asleep.
Have you hit up any local spots to do sort of, you know, local material and work out that sort of...
I have.
Well, I guess you would have worked out last time you were here.
Right, yeah, did it last time and I've done it this time just to kind of prep for the shows. I did the Crab Lab, which those guys...
One.
Yeah, listen, you're the comedy scene here. Yeah. It's like me and the other comics were waiting to go on. We were like, is anybody going to suck, please? So we can, everybody, the comedians here are amazing. I don't know if the audiences, and I mean, they were laughing like crazy, but they might be so spoiled with the scene. I mean, like, I've been to two different independent shows, and everyone was good. Like, I have no reason to say that. I mean, everybody was just really good, and it shows you that the comedy scene kind of pushes itself. And I was talking to the comics, and they were like, you know, we'll tell somebody, like, hey, that premise has been done, or hey, that might not be a direction you want to go, or maybe think about this. So you can tell they're all pushing each other, and it's almost, you know, almost like crabs in a barrel. They're pushing each other closer to the top. So it's really impressive.
It's good. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. Home of former world champion Cleveland Cavaliers. We lost. We lost while I was here. It's like, it's weird to watch your team lose when you're having a great time.
But you saw it in the future, I guess.
That's right. Yeah.
It hadn't happened. Yeah,
exactly.
It happened a day early.
I was just calling my family, like, guys, and it doesn't work out well.
And did you start comedy in Cleveland? Or?
I didn't. I started comedy in Miami, Florida, which is not known for stand-up. It's known for bikinis and yes, and drinks with sugar in them.
What sort of open mics were happening down there?
Oh, not great ones.
Just one-nighters.
A lot of one-nighters. And first, I just love being able to talk about comedy. Yeah. It's when I started, like, I look at, you know, just take the Crab Lab, for example. Like, people are, like, there for the show and, like, facing the stage. When I started comedy, we would literally go into, like, a bar on ladies' night. The manager wouldn't know that there was a comedy show. He'd have to call the owner who's sleeping home, and put him up. And so, like, there'd be a DJ, and he would just stop playing music and be like, all right, we got three comics. And people were like, what? What? Like, guys got their arms around a girl. They're like, what are you doing? Jeez. Get away from it. So it's like, to see younger comics set up a scene and just watch it grow and watch rooms expand, and so you can get up 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah.
And it's a quality show. It's not a show where it's just hurting your soul like it's in the back of a, you know, a place where they wash clothes or something. Like, it's like a real, real venue, and you can tell the venue's happy to have them.
Yeah,
appreciated.
Yeah, they appreciate it, and they know it. You just keep telling the crowd, like, look, even if you don't know the comics on the show, you know our brand, and we don't put anything terrible on that stage, and it's just, and it kind of perpetuates itself.
There are a few rooms we've frequented, few bottom of the barrel rooms here in Melbourne. That, don't worry, there are bottom of the barrel rooms.
Yes, and those rooms build character.
They do.
You know,
exactly.
You can't. What do they say? Steel sharpens steel.
Yeah. The rooms we've been to, they give you a free drink for going up. You know, and it's the.
Do they give you two free drinks for getting off?
it's a struggle.
The pain.
It's a struggle
after. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you end up spending more at the bar. After,
right.
Yeah.
That's a great business model, though.
Yeah,
they torture our comics. Until they drink themselves to death.
But before you were a comedian, you were in the field of education.
I was.
You were. You were a middle school teacher.
Yes, you're a junior school.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I myself am a teacher as well. When
that's
I'm not
great.
Here. Yeah, yeah. But I like that you were able to make the jump. You said, stuff it, because the teaching's a reliable job, but there's always work for you.
Right.
And you went, comedy, I'm going to have more fun.
What was
and enjoying everything. What was the jump? What was the thing that made you jump to comedy from teaching?
Oh, man, the one good thing about teaching, the one good thing, that sounded horrible. The one half thing I think of is good. No, the great thing about teaching was that, and I don't know how you guys do it over here, but we have our summers off.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
because our summers are off, that was almost like giving me a testing ground to see, like, how I could live, how little money I could make and live on it, you know, without having. So, like, by the time I made the jump to summer, the summer going into my fifth year of teaching, when I told my school, like, I had done two summers where I just lived on my comedy money, which was not a lot.
Yeah.
But I was like, I can at least pay my bills and buy bread.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And so the jump happened the summer going into my fifth year teaching, because at the end, and you know this as a teacher, you know, we're almost living these dual lives where you're at work and you have to be present. You can't show up to work as a teacher and not be any good to anybody until 10:30. Like, their kids, my kids, I had 35, 12-year-olds. Sitting in a classroom at 6:50 in the morning.
But there's, and you'd know it as well. You, when you're at the school, you're switched on. You're Mr. Jackson. You know?
Yes.
It's not till you've driven home that you switch off and you become
Right.
Yeah. Back to yourself.
Yeah. You know? And then, yeah. And then you got to, then you go from back to yourself to a comic at 8 o'clock. You do one or two shows at night. You get a couple of beers with your boys after the show. And now you look up and you're like, oh, it's 2 o'clock. Yeah. I have to be at school at six. And so you end up kind of burning both ends of the candle. Yeah. If I can use the old man sense of the day. Yeah. What, can we edit that out? That was the oldest man thing I've ever said in my life. You're putting the carrot in front of the horse. Just start saying old people stuff. I knew going in, I just didn't have it in me to do both. I remember one time I was driving to school and I just looked at my face in the mirror and I was like, this is not sustainable. I just wasn't sleeping. You know, you're doing gigs all night and then, because at the end of my fourth year, I feel like at first you're a teacher that's kind of doing this comedy thing, and then by the end you're a comedian that's masquerading as a teacher. Like, I just wasn't a teacher anymore, you know.
So did that mean then the kids copped it sometimes? Like, you know, you were out all night, and then you went back in the morning, and did they cop the banned of Mr. Jackson?
Yeah, well they didn't. It wasn't the bad. I think they just knew. Like, you can lie to people about anything. People know you haven't slept. There's say 12-year-olds like, hey, what's up, buddy? Yeah, you good? Yeah. You straight?
Did you ever try running any of your material on them? Like some of your more modify the joke a little bit? And did you ever try?
Not really, because I don't know if you got, like, 12-year-olds do not think adults are funny at all.
No, they don't.
They don't. Everybody's like, I know you had your kids laugh, and they were like, no. They, I think they were shocked when they found out that I was a comedian.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, Mr. Jackson, he's not funny. It's weird. 12-year-olds think other 12-year-olds are hilarious. I'm like, I could have wrote that. I still do miss my, I miss my kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, I miss teaching. Definitely.
We're joined by comedian Al Jackson. Thank you so much for coming by and doing all those fancy dance moves that you were just doing right then in the song.
You know me. Sweet feet. I can't. Once I start dancing, it's over. Dylan knows.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I was jealous of your moves.
Dylan was trying to learn something, but I don't know. I guess you're too secretive on the dance moves. You don't want to give them away.
You know, dude, I'm worried that the dancing's going away.
No.
I'm an older gentleman now. It's like starting to go where I'm like, I haven't danced in 2 years. If I'm dancing, like something's gone horribly wrong or horribly right. Like that. Yeah,
have you had any after parties here after any of the shows?
Or anything planned for your trip here?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was going to go probably grab a drink later tonight. But I know, like, the lockout law is here. And I don't know. Is that here in Melbourne?
In Melbourne? You don't have to worry about that.
Oh, yeah. Because I was in Sydney. And I'm not disrespect. I love Sydney.
Who needs them?
It was just so hard. I didn't know what was happening. We got locked out of a bar called Midnight Special at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, call them out.
That was like, how is that even possible? Like, that's
insane.
It's just like, and then when you get there, and I mean, that was the coolest bar we went to. But like, you just go to these bars, and it's just like, you can get a drink, but it can't be a double. But if you get double, then the double's got to be in another glass. And it's like, no shots, but you can take a shot if there's. I'm like, are we drinking or figuring out an algorithm?
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening.
That's some serious rules.
It's a lot. It was so many rules. It's like the more you drink, you just stay more sober because you're thinking
so much.
At
every point.
You got to wake up how many standard drinks you've had.
All right, Melbourne. Well, I'm going to see y'all tonight then.
You don't even need to book accommodation. Just stay all night.
Yeah,
just at the club.
That always sounds like a great idea, and then it's 3:20 and everybody goes home. You're like, uh-oh, should have booked accommodations.
So we were talking about, before the song, you know, being a teacher and you growing up in Cleveland, Ohio. But where you got to start in Miami, Florida.
I did.
When did you move out to L.A.? Was that the next comedy move?
No, the next comedy move was actually New York City. I lived in New York for 4.5 years. I got my half-hour special on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I moved up there. Actually, the first show I got on Comedy Central was a show called Live at Gotham, which was shot at the Gotham Comedy Club in New York. And that was my first stand-up. And then I did a half-hour special with Comedy Central, and then I got a job writing on the basketball player Shaquille O'Neal's, he had a TV show, a short-lived TV show. Thank you, guys. It was called Upload with Shaquille O'Neal, and I was the head writer on that show for 2 years.
Okay.
So that took me out to L.A.
Two years isn't that bad.
No, it was a good run. It was a good run, and Shaq was awesome, and I'm a huge basketball fan.
Yeah.
So, you know, like when you meet somebody you're a fan of, and you're just like, please don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
Please, you know, it's like a real thing.
You don't want the person to ruin themselves.
And Shaq is like, honestly, exactly who you think. He's a gigantic big kid.
Well, you're right, 6 foot, and he would still dwarf you.
Yeah, oh, I had a picture of us on my old phone, and you know, Shaq is just. It, you know, we all work in entertainment, so you see people that are famous and people that, you know, and like by the third time, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, what's up? Good to see you. Yeah. Every day that you see Shaq, it's like seeing him for the first time. He's, because he's as tall as he is thick, you know, he's just not like a skinny, tall guy. He's a big dude.
A presence.
Yeah,
a
presence. He's just like, it's like a, he's like a, like a Game of Thrones character. He's alive. Yeah, so, so he was awesome, and that took me out there. And then after the show went away, I just stayed out there and got a lot of work. And
what was the experience like having being a head writer for a show? What was your writing staff? How many did you have on the staff?
It was fun. There were 6 of us total. And when I say head writer, I mean it was like I feel like we were all pitching ideas. I think I was put down as head writer for tax reasons for a lot of people.
Right. Huh?
But it was really fun. And a lot of those guys are big time writers on other shows now. Okay. But it was great because it was a video clip show. Mm-hmm. So it's like you just sit there and you're like, okay, my job is to come into this office every day, watch some idiot try and run across a frozen lake
and write
fall
jokes.
Through it and write jokes about it with my stupid friends.
That sounds awesome.
Good gig. Yeah, right? You know? Yeah. So it was so much fun. Yeah. I remember I was talking to one of the people that worked in the main office, and she was just like, we hear you guys just cracking up laughing in there every day, and we just want to come. Because, I mean, you're just goofballs. Yeah, like, that's what comedians are. We're just gigantic children.
Compared with writing your own special and writing for someone else, is there a difference? Is it harder to write in someone else's voice?
Well, yeah, it's you just learn. Once you... The more time you spend with somebody, the more you understand, like, their style and how they want jokes written. And, you know, with Shaq, when I would write for him, I would think about it just like he played basketball. Like, Shaq wasn't shooting 3-pointers. Mm. You know, you throw the ball close to the rim, he grabs the ball and dunks it. Yeah. So, like, Shaq, was really good at delivering, like, a quick line. So every time I'd write the jokes for the – because they were 2 co-hosts. Mm. So I'd write the setup for the joke for them, and then he kind of, you know, she won't be coming back anytime soon. Right. Like, that's all he needed to say, you know? It would just be, like, one line for him. But, yeah, that's a great question. Like, different – you kind of get to know people off stage, and then I can write jokes for you on stage.
Because I thought it would be hard to find their voice without putting too much of your own spin on it.
Right. Well, also the process is sped up because Shaq is so honest. Like, when we're going through run-throughs, if you write a joke and it bombs, you just hear Shaq's voice just go, "Who wrote that?" And I mean, he'd say it in a joking way, but everybody, you just see all these writers just cower. Like, I did. He's like, "Nice one, Al." So, yeah, it's...
While you were out in New York, did you... Is that the time you also went on Dave Attell's... that one?
That was Dave Attell's New York stand-up special. No, it was John Oliver's New York stand-up special, Dave Attell's Comedy Underground.
Underground, yeah, that's right.
And Dave has been a friend of mine my entire comedy career.
Really?
He's been, and it's weird. Dave's one of those guys that I've known Dave since I picked up my first microphone, and I'm still in awe of him. But he doesn't know that. He thinks we're just friends, and every time I see him, I'm like, "Oh my gosh, Dave Attell!" You know. But Dave Attell took me on tour when that show Insomniac was out years ago. When I was still teaching middle school, he took me on a tour, and I feel like that was when I went on that short tour. We just did 4 cities around Florida, like, you know, Miami, Tampa, Orlando, right. You know. And I remember doing that tour, and I was like, that was like, I'm not a teacher anymore. I was like, I'm done. I was like, this is what I want to do.
You know? Talking about tours, you're here in Australia for a very exciting reason.
Yes.
You're a part of a troupe, if you can say.
Yes.
That's
how many people do you need to have a troupe?
3. I'll get back to you.
All right.
I think 3.
3?
I'm going to say 3.
3.
Yeah, right?
Trio.
Yeah, that's where I went.
But then are you only a trio can be a troupe, but a troupe doesn't necessarily have to be a trio.
Ooh.
That's like a Venn diagram. Ooh,
yeah.
It?
Yeah.
That's a haiku.
Guys, we'll talk about this off air. Yeah, so we're here with 2 other hilarious comics, Megan Gailey and Matt Broussard.
Yes. Both had them on the show.
We did.
Super fun. I came in last. I don't know how to feel about that, fellas.
We came in real life.
Yeah, that's even better. We wanted you here in person, of course.
Way to clean that up. I'll take it. Listen, we wanted you.
But the last time you came out here, you were with Hannibal Buress. You opened for Hannibal.
Yes.
How did you get in touch with Hannibal? How do you know Hannibal?
Tinder. Met him on Tinder. No, it's
super like.
Hannibal and I have been friends forever. I used to do his room, the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn, for years. And from there, we just started hanging out. I think he and I have a mutual friend in common, which is Jameson. And we've just been best friends for years. We've done, this is our first international tour, but we had toured the States maybe three other times. I think he's working on a movie in Atlanta right now, so things are going well. He's obviously, Hannibal's doing great. But he's a hilarious comic and a good friend. So he brought me over here for the first time, and I'm forever in debt because I love it over here. He's making me pay him back. So
we saw the I think Instagram photo of you. Did you go to the Healesville Sanctuary?
Yes.
And you met the wombats there. And
the weight of my heart is through a wombat. Yeah. I didn't know. Who knew?
We tried to explain wombats to Megan. How would you describe a wombat?
A wombat seems like if you were going to buy your kid like a stuffed koala bear for like their birthday, but then you were like, they're out of them.
Yeah.
But there's something that looks just like it, and you're like, oh, my kid won't know the difference. He's four. Yeah. Like, that's what a wombat is. It's like a koala bear for somebody that doesn't know what one looks like.
Did you get to pat the wombats?
We did. We touched the wombat a little bit. It was a baby, and it was like sleeping. So, yeah, but we got it. They're very chill and just like, I feel like if you petted a wombat, or patted, you got to say patted. We said petted. Mm-hmm. If you patted a wombat every day, I think it would lower your blood pressure. You cannot be stressed out patting a wombat. You can't do it.
And wombats are safer than koalas. I didn't want to tell Megan this, but koalas are often riddled with chlamydia. So,
right.
Wow. Well,
you dodged a bullet there.
Right. And we're comedians, so are we. So. What are you judging us? Who told you? She was lying.
But you'll be performing tonight, Friday night.
You've just performed.
Tonight.
Yes,
that's right.
And you've also got the Friday and Saturday.
That's right. Right. At the Comics Lounge.
Yes, so come check me out, guys.
So go to the Comics Lounge website if you want to get tickets for that. And where can people get you on the Instagrams, on the Twitters?
You can find me in these streets. Yeah. but you can also find me on Twitter, super easy, just my name, Al Jackson. And on Instagram, Al Jackson IG.
Awesome. So Instagram, it took me a while to realize what the
if you say it out loud, sometimes people make a misstep.
Yeah,
had that happen before.
Oh,
so yeah,
Jesus.
A DJ read it and he was like, "Yeah, you can find him on Instagram at Al Jackson Nig."
Oh,
and then just his face is like, it was just like he was like, "Oh, my career's over." I was like, and it was a friend of mine, so I was like, "He's okay. He's a nice guy."
Was there someone blogging?
I wasn't famous enough at the time. Thank the Lord for him because he's still in the air.
What a great way to end the interview. But thank you so much for coming down, Alan.
Love you guys, man. Anytime, man.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully next time you're in the country, we can sit down again and have another chat.
I wouldn't have it any other way, man.
Right, have a good flight home.
Yes,
sir. You're already sending me home. I got a couple more.
No. Just make sure you get your supplements and your red wine.
Your supplements.
Thank you so much. You listen to Laugh Out Proud
with Z&G
on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.